What in the world is a cyber trust mark? Cold Fusion is under attack and Microsoft Exchange suffers vulnerabilities. All that coming up now on ThreatWire. Greetings, I am Shannon Morris and this is ThreatWire for July 25th, 2023. I am back from my family vacation and this is your summary of the threats to our security, privacy, and internet freedom. Let's go ahead and jump right into the news this week. What is the cyber trust mark? Well, for years we have been hearing rumors and advocacy to introduce some kind of insignia or label onto smart home packaging that could help you make safer choices when it comes to connected devices. If you're anything like me and you have a constant stream of people, especially family, asking you, "Hey Shannon, what connected doorbell should I buy? What thermostat do you recommend? What baby monitor do you think is safest?" The list goes on, and having a quick label that we could refer to for security information and recommendations on a device could potentially save hours of time researching. This could also be a huge benefit to consumer privacy and security. So the Cyber Trust Mark is a certification and labeling program proposed by the Federal Communications Commission, or the FCC, and it is set to launch next year. The whole idea behind this is to get smart device vendors to voluntarily commit to this program, ensuring their products meet some serious cybersecurity criteria from the National Institute of Standards and Technology, or NIST. That could include anything from unique and strong default passwords, data protection, software updates, and incident detection capabilities. If a product ends up checking all those boxes, it gets labeled with this distinct shield logo. You spot that logo and you know it's gone through that NIST approved security screening. So the goal is to make it easier for consumers to know if their smart thermostat, their sprinkler controller, their baby monitor is secure without having to do hours of research before hitting that buy button. So what do the different colors mean for all of these different codes? Because there's several different proposed colors. Well, that's also up for debate. NIST has some suggestions like encrypted transmission and storage, software updates, and control over passwords and data retention, but there's no definitive decision just yet. Each cyber trust mark will come with some kind of QR code that gives you all of the details about how that particular device earned its shield shade, but it is complicated. Some IoT devices have multiple interconnected devices inside of them, like routers do, and how do you rate the cloud server or the smartphone application that connects to the device? What about products that get major updates that the box does not actually reflect? And data privacy, does that actually count as security as well? Well, Carnegie Mellon University Sci-Lab is pushing for more transparency on the product packaging regarding data collection, not just dumping it all onto a QR code that people would have to pull up. There's still a lot of details to work out, but I'm feeling pretty optimistic about this because major players like Amazon, Google, Best Buy, LG Electronics, Logitech, and Samsung Electronics have already jumped on board. These are some of the biggest names in the industry, and they are ready to include this labeling on their own product packaging. Now, the FCC is waiting to hear from stakeholders. They are trying to figure out what devices should be labeled, who should oversee the program, who should verify the standards and handle consumer education. For starters though, NIST is already working on defining a set of security requirements for consumer-grade routers by the end of this year. The Department of Energy is also working on labeling for smart meters and power inverters. It is a step in the right direction to make our connected lives a little bit safer, but there are still plenty of challenges to work out. Keep an eye out for more updates and discussions as this initiative progresses. Attackers are taking advantage of several vulnerabilities in Adobe's Cold Fusion servers to wreak havoc and gain remote access to vulnerable systems. Researchers at Rapid7 spotted threat actors chaining together exploits to bypass authentication and remotely execute all sorts of commands to install web shells on these servers. The vulnerabilities in question are an access control bypass flaw, which is known as CVE-2023 29298. And there's a critical remote code execution vulnerability. That one is labeled as CVE-2023-38203 with a severity score of 9.8. Now, Adobe has first disclosed the authentication bypass flaw, which was the 29298 back on July 11th. On July 14th, they released an out-of-band security update for the CVE-2023-38203, which was discovered by Project Discovery. All these CVEs get kind of confusing, so I will hopefully track them correctly in this story. There's a third flaw, the critical CVE-2023-29300. That vulnerability has a security score of 9.8 as well, and that one allows unauthenticated attackers to remotely execute commands on vulnerable Cold Fusion servers. Now, while Adobe originally stated that this flaw was also being actively exploited, they later retracted that detail. I mentioned it gets confusing. 29300 was not being used in the wild, though 2 days later, Rapid7 observed attackers chaining all these attacks together. Whew. So there was a proof of concept exploit for this vulnerability that was shared via a blog post by Project Discovery, but that has since been taken down after they initially posted it on July 12th. It's like so much drama. Now, while Adobe did address some of these issues in their updates, Rapid7 researchers then discovered that the fix for CVE-2023-29298 could still be bypassed. Yeah, so on July 19th, Adobe then released another out-of-band patch that fixed several lower severity vulnerabilities, but it also included 29298 in there. Now, Adobe recommends that administrators lock down their Cold Fusion installations to boost security. The researchers also warn that the CVE ending in 29300 and possibly the one ending in 38203 can be combined with 29298 to bypass lockdown mode, leaving all your systems still exposed. CISA has added the Cold Fusion vulnerabilities to their known exploited vulnerabilities catalog as of now. So, at the end of this whole confusion and all this debacle, to protect your own installation at this point in time, at time of recording, it is crucial to update to the latest available version of Cold Fusion, especially the one that addresses 38203. And that should help prevent that full exploit chain of all those different vulnerabilities working together. It's a lot, I know. Biggest of shout outs to my Patreon supporters, especially my golden s'mores and their fur babies for making the show completely possible since we don't have YouTube ads on the show at all. And a huge thank you to Julian, Michael, Christopher, and Joshua for being a part of the s'mores over at patreon.com/ShannonMorse. That is my new Patreon page for the show. I'm posting all of the perks for patrons over there, including early access to this very video. If you're currently a patron on the ThreatWire Patreon page, switch on over to the new one so you don't lose access to your perks going forward. Let's go ahead and finish out today's episode with my last top story about Microsoft, who's having a very terrible month. Microsoft and the Ukraine CERT have issued a warning about a notorious hacking group called Turla, believed to be linked to Russia's Federal Security Service, or their FSB. These state-sponsored attackers are targeting the defense industry and Microsoft Exchange servers with a sneaky new malware backdoor named Delivery Check. Delivery Check starts with some phishing emails that contain malicious Excel attachments. When victims fall for that bait and they open those attachments, malicious macros inside execute a PowerShell command, creating a scheduled task that pretends to be a Firefox browser updater. This actually downloads and launches the Delivery Check backdoor within memory. Now, once activated, Delivery Check connects to the threat actor's command and control server, allowing them to remotely control the infected devices and deploy further malware payloads. Now, what sets Delivery Check apart is its server-side component that targets Microsoft Exchange servers. This turns all those servers into command and control centers for their malicious activities. And this component, installed using the desired state configuration, automatically loads a Windows executable, transforming the Exchange server into that dangerous malware distribution hub. Ooh, yikes. The Turla group is also deploying a nasty information stealing backdoor, which they are calling Kazuar, or K-A-Z-U-A-R. This tool lets them steal data from event logs, system files, and even snatch authentication tokens and credentials from various programs. They are even after Signal desktop messaging app files, giving them access to private Signal conversations. Now, while Microsoft and CertUA are working hard to detect and mitigate this threat, there's still work to be done. As of time of recording, only 35 out of 70 vendors on VirusTotal have detected the submitted delivery check sample as malware. More vendors are likely to catch up soon, so that number will likely increase. Now, along with this news, we have some other Microsoft news. Another APT group, which is called Storm0558 out of China, gained access to Exchange Online and Outlook.com accounts via a stolen signing key. According to Redmond's July 12th disclosure, the breach hit about 24 organizations. The attackers exploited a now patched flaw, allowing for forged signatures to access tokens and impersonate accounts in targeted organizations, including government agencies in the United States and Western Europe. Although Microsoft had initially stated that only Exchange Online and Outlook were impacted, Wiz actually found that the hackers could impersonate any account within any impacted customer or cloud-based Microsoft application. After the breach, Microsoft ended up revoking all valid MSA signing keys to prevent any further unauthorized access. Now, after that, CISA later urged Microsoft to expand access to their cloud logging data for free, which apparently you had to pay for that, due to the onslaught of recent issues, which Microsoft did agree to. Now, make sure to stay vigilant against any kind of phishing emails and be extra cautious with email attachments, especially those Excel files. We can't have y'all clicking on those. Keep your systems and software up to date and make sure to have reliable antivirus and cybersecurity solutions in place. Now, to end this video, I wanted to close out today's episode by saying a thank you to Kevin Mitnick, who just passed away from battling cancer, if you did not hear the news. Not only was Kevin a huge fan of everything we did at Hack 5, like the Wi-Fi pineapple and the USB rubber ducky over the past decade and a half, but he also treated me personally with tons of respect through the years. I had no clue who this guy was when I started with Hack 5 well over a decade ago, but when I met him in person, I interviewed him on Hack 5, he didn't act like a InfoSec celebrity. He treated me like an equal to him, and he often asked me questions about what I was learning, and he was excited to hear what I had to say. So whether you liked him or not, he's a big reason why so many folks got interested in this industry and why so many of our services in our networks are safe now. It's because he introduced so many people to that as an option for their own careers. I'm grateful to have known him, so thank you, Kevin. You will be missed. I'm Shannon Morse. Stay vigilant, stay secure, and I will see you on the internet.